Welcome to Gen Z Hoops, the Gen Z basketball, coaching, and sports business show. On this podcast, you'll learn from professional players, coaches, and executives from all over the world and see the court in a brand new way. And now, joining you courtside, your Gen Z host, John Hartafillis.
Jeffrey, what's going on, man?
John, I appreciate you having me on, dude. I love what you're doing with Two Way. So happy to be on again.
Thank you so much. It's awesome having you on. I'm actually outdoors for the first time with a virtual background, which we don't have virtual backgrounds. So this is the first. This is exciting. No better person. Right? I mean, you're the first person to come on the show. The moment you showed love and commented on when we started Two Way, I was like, okay, Jeffrey's gonna be the first guest no matter what. And the topic of today's episode fits you beautifully, because I mean, I tell everyone you're like the G League almanac. Like, when I think of the G League, I told you this before, I don't want you blushing on camera, but basically what I told you is that when I think of the G League, I think of you. I think of other people. Sometimes I think of their respective, or I think of their respective teams, or I think of like what they're, you know, they're if they're a defensive minded coach, I'll think of that. With you, when I think of you, I think of the G League. Like, just straight up, I think of like this logo. Like, that's what I think of, because you are absolutely all over it, and I see it every day on my Instagram story and everything. So you are synonymous.
I appreciate that. It's weird, because like the G League over the past, I guess since it came Fanatical like 2015 or so, right? But over the past like a year and a half, as I created G League TV and stuff, it's kind of just been my life, just like following everything that's going on. And I don't, tell you the truth, I don't even follow the NBA like that. I could care less what's going on with like Trae Young or LeBron or any of those guys. The only NBA players that I follow are like the G League guys or the two-way guys, the 10-day type of players, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's kind of just been my life. So the fact that I'm like kind of identify with it in an informal way is like really cool.
Definitely. And for all those that don't know your story, we're going to get into it a little bit now before we get into the main topic, but check out episode 204 of Gen Z Hoops. It's all there. We went through, that was a long episode, and we just kind of went through all your stuff. A lot of just like how you do what you do, how you made G League TV, how you made it happen, what your process looks like, you know, what the reaction is. People love it, right? And I knew it before, because I would see it on people's stories. I knew kind of that it was people loved it beforehand. But now that I'm actually like, you know, I know you and I'm like looking at your stuff, all I see is just the love you're getting from all these players and coaches. And I'm actually meeting people. And I went to Vegas. I would tell people like, yeah, you know, oh, I had like, well, you were one of my first, you were one of my last episodes before I went to Vegas. People were like, oh, you're Jeffrey Key, you're the guy from G League TV. Like, that's so cool. So like, it was awesome kind of getting that feedback and stuff. And like I said, knowing that this episode is going to be all about kind of the past of the G League, right? We're going to, I don't want to spoil who's on for present and future. If anyone's seen our recent episodes, you can kind of guess who maybe is a Gen Z type guest and serves as kind of like the president of the G League, and who of our guests is doing something really cool for the G League and the G League's expansion. And is going to talk to us a little bit about the future and where the G League might be heading. So the very exciting stuff coming up, but you are kicking us off with some past stuff about the G League, and you have a really nice hat on. And I'd love for you to tell us about maybe some of the background of that hat and the role it plays in making the many variations of the league we know today as the G League.
Yeah, absolutely. So this hat, it's one of the best $20 I've spent on eBay. It's a CBA hat, and it's retro. It's like from the 80s or 90s. But essentially, a lot of people don't know this. So the G League was founded in 2001. But before that, the NBA in their own right did have their own developmental system in the Continental Basketball Association. And so it's, you know, tell you the truth, in the early 2000s, 90s, there were a lot of minor leagues, right? And so there was the CBA, there's the USBL, there was the ABA, which tried to make a comeback as well. But the CBA was the biggest. And like I said, they were essentially the G League of the 80s and 90s. And so when, you know, teams would have, NBA teams would have players that they didn't think were quite ready yet, they would have them play in the CBA just like they do now with the G League. The same way, if a player is rehabbing, they're on a rehab assignment, they'll send them down for a couple weeks, make sure they get their body right, make sure they're in shape. And so, you know, after those few weeks, they call them back up to the league. But yeah, so the CBA was around for like 20 years. And eventually a lot of the teams from the CBA ended up joining the G League. And so the biggest ones were like the Vipers joined the G League, the Dakota Wizards. I'm trying to think who was some of the other ones. The Idaho Stampede, right? So these were other teams that were, Reno Bighorns, another big one. So these guys were in the CBA. The CBA, they had money problems for years, right? So they weren't doing well. I think they decided after a while, like, hey, listen, this league is about to fold, which eventually did. We're going to go join the D League, the NBDL at the time. And so, but that's a little bit of background. The G League wasn't necessarily the first. It's the most successful, but it wasn't the first.
I love that. It's so fun thinking about the early days, kind of the need for what would end up becoming the G League and how that all kind of got started. So really cool thinking about all that and the progression of how we got to today. What was right before like the first ever G League draft, you know, at the time MBDL draft, what was maybe like the first, like the catapult for starting the league? Like what was that, maybe that, what would really happen to say, okay, 2001, 2002, that's, we're getting this thing going.
Yeah, I think it was the need for, I think at the time, the G League or the NBA knew that the CBA was going to fold, right? It was one of those things where there were so many teams and kind of year in and year out, team would fold and then another team would pop up and another team would fold and it was kind of inconsistent. But to tell you the truth, when the G League first started, when it was the NBDL, they had very similar problems, you know, which I can talk on in a second. But yeah, and you know, you and I had discussed this before when, you know, we're thinking about the early days of the D League, 2001 draft, right? These players were coming up in the draft and you would think that if, as you're getting drafted, you're going to come in like a suit the same way you do with the NBA or of any other big occasion. You know, if you look at the pictures from the 2001 draft, these guys, Chris Anderson, who was number one pick, he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt, jeans and sneakers, right? And you would think, oh my God. I mean, it looks like they're in a high school gym as well, right? So you have all these guys getting drafted and it kind of just shows like how, you know, those early days, I don't think that they knew the legitimacy of the league. They knew that, of course, it's associated with the NBA and has a chance of really taking off, but it was such a baby back then. You know, now if they had a G League draft in person, I bet you these guys would be showing up in suits. And, you know, I'll be damned if I ever saw like a player nowadays having the audacity to show up in a Hawaiian shirt, you know? But to tell you the truth, like I said before, those early days of the D League, they had a lot of those same problems where teams are doing really well in terms of their record. You know, maybe they have a good amount of call-ups too, but they're drawing no traction in their home bases, right? People aren't going to games. People just didn't really care for whatever reason. And it was, there was a good 10 years or so where it was like just a test run. You know, they were testing out different cities. Some teams would be around 3-4 years, they'd fold. Same thing with the CBA, they'd come up with a new team. But I think that the NBA, they were so invested in it because this actually was 100% affiliated with the NBA. Like it was their baby. They were willing to go through years of just having like, you know, just having a couple hiccups here and there in order to make this thing right. It's interesting is that from 2002 to 2009, every single champion from those 7-8 years, all those teams are non-existent anymore. So like the Greenville Groove, the Mobile Revelers, the Asheville Attitude, all those teams are not around. The Dakota Wizards, even the Idaho Stampede, I know that, you know, they've become a different team now, but you know, even teams like that, it's like, man, you know, they don't even exist anymore, right? And it's like, it's crazy because they were at one point the most dominant teams in the D-League, right? So it's crazy to see how it's prospered from the first 10 years to the last 10 years where, you know, the first 10 years, players are getting paid $15,000. They're taking bus trips, you know, 10-hour bus trips everywhere. Half of the teams are folding year in and year out. And then now each team is affiliated with an NBA franchise. You know, they're properly funded. Players are not nearly getting paid as much as I'm sure they would like. You know, standard contracts start at $35,000, but it's head and shoulders above, you know, the $15,000, $12,000 they were making before, right? They're actually taking plane rides to their games or staying in nice hotels. You know, the difference between the first 10 years to the last 10 years has been night and day. And that the part that I'm looking forward to is like the next 10 years where they continue to progress, right? How the league continues to grow. You know, there's two teams right now without G League teams. It's the Blazers and the Suns. And so I would love to, the Suns did have one, but their management said that, I think it has a lot to do with money too. They didn't want to fund it. They weren't using it as much as other teams are. So they decided to just disband. But all except for two teams have one. And, you know, we had Mexico City now coming in and, you know, there's other talks about expanding overseas. So the next 10 years is super exciting. The first 10 years was a little bit iffy. The last 10 years have been really good. The next 10 years are going to be fantastic, I think.
Definitely gonna be really good. Now don't spoil the second and third, the present and future episodes. Those are gonna be
right. I didn't want to spoil that one.
Course,
you know,
of course. I'm just optimistic. Obviously, no, very optimistic. I mean, thinking about the last 10 years, like the, you know, the whole past of it, and what's gonna come up is so amazing. And that's kind of why I think, right? I mean, that's kind of why I'm doing this now. Why Two Way even exists? It's kind of why, you know, why Julie TV exists. Why all these other things are popping up? Because people are starting to realize, people that are paying attention and are smart enough and realize it, that hey, the G League's up to something. It's always been really cool, but right now it really is. Just gaining momentum. So that, I mean, it's great talking about, I mean, thinking about how that start of that momentum maybe happened. Because I mean, obviously I would imagine with all these teams maybe getting defunct, it might with some of the times that it maybe wasn't looking too good for the original D League, like where things weren't going so well.
Yeah, I think it was in those early years, they just, it was hard for them to find legitimacy. Like I said, at the time, there were so many other minor leagues, whether it was like the USBL, which at one time was pretty big. The CBA actually did still exist at the time, right? So I know a couple of the teams end up moving from the CBA to, and eventually to the D League. But to be quite honest with you, they all existed at one point in time, right? And so, and also when you're not paying players that much, it's like, okay, you know, I could take this gig in the D League, and but I'm getting paid, you know, $15,000 or so. I think that it just took a few years, just like with anything, just like with the ball league now that we have in Africa, you know, the Basketball Africa League, it's going to take them 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 10 years to be like a legitimate league, you know? I mean, this past year they had J. Cole playing in there, and we talked about it before early on in the D-League days, you know, Roy Jones Jr. had a stint in Mobile, right? So like when leagues are like that are young, they're willing to do stuff like that even for a little bit of publicity, you know, just to get the name out there a little bit. But yeah, I think the thing was that it's sponsored by the NBA. The same with the Ball League. It's sponsored by the NBA. It has the Shield backing it, you know? So ultimately, it's going to be successful, right? It's just going to take a while for people to really like think, oh, this is a legitimate league. It's the same way we think about, it's weird because like minor league baseball has been around for how long? Forever. And in a short amount of time, the G League has become much bigger than minor league baseball. I know that basketball is more mainstream and more like into pop culture and stuff like that. So that's the reason why a lot more young people identify with it. But we never hear about minor league baseball, and they've been around for like, I don't even know how long, probably like 50 years, 40 years. But we hear about the G League a ton, and it's really been around for 20 years, you know, 10 good years and then 10 iffy years. So in that short amount of time, they've really worked out all the kinks, and it's starting to become and have so much legitimacy where players nowadays, when they're looking to go to the G League, they're not thinking, oh man, I'm taking a step down. Oh, I'm playing in a league that's a bit of a joke. You know, back in the day, you could make that argument, right? I remember hearing an interview with Ray Ferralston, Skip to My Lou. And at the time he was out of the league, he was just playing on, this was probably like maybe like 2006. He was out of the league. He was just playing on the New York streets, dominating on the New York streets. And his agent said, hey, why don't you come to the G League? Or at the D League at the time and play a little bit with them and get your name out. And he was like, no, I'm not going to the D League. Like, you know, what is that? He basically was like, what is that? Right. And, you know, that was 15 years ago. Now, not all stars are considering it, not all former players are considering it, but I bet you that 95% of guys who are out of the league and looking to make their way back in it are thinking, maybe I should go the G League route, right? It's not looked the same as it was before. And as it goes on, we're going to start seeing even like probably more stars playing in the G League the way we did with like Kevin Porter or Jeremy Lin. But yeah, you know, having like a guy like Roy Jones, there's just been so many stories in the D League that, and I really would want to start like a documentary of the G League and all those stories that are just not told, you know, that would feature someone like a Roy Jones and what it was like for him. Like, what did he think about the D League back then? You know what I mean? Like, did he think that, you know, just because of his name and stuff like that, like, did the D League want him because of the name and the attention that he would bring? You know, we mentioned Stephanie Reddy before the show. You know, she was the first woman ever hired in the G League for Greensville back in 2001. She was an assistant coach, and then she kind of had a little stint as a head coach when their head coach got ejected. And so she, in a way, paved the way for women to work in the G League and work in sports. And same with Nancy Lieberman, who was the head coach of the Texas Legends from 2011 to 2013. There's all these like pioneers of the league, former MVPs that no one gets talked about, you know, early call-ups that no one really talks about. There's so much history in the league that doesn't get talked about. And I've mentioned it before, it's kind of like Atlantis. Like, we know, I guess, that it kind of exists, right? But there's no actual like evidence other than a few things here and there. And so my dream is to like kind of one day work on a documentary that would kind of take us back to 2001 and the people who were in those early initial stages of the league and the decision makers and the key players and stuff like that. And just to see how far it's grown over the last 20 years.
You're giving away the secret. The mic's over here. You're giving away the secret of two-way. I'm kidding. Good. We will. That's the goal. I like to not to give too much away, but after talking to some execs in the G League that we both know very well,
yeah,
a few of them were recommending that a couple of us band up together and do something special like that. So it might be in the cards coming up soon. I don't know. I don't want to say too much. Mic's over here, right next to me. It's kind of invisible with the background, but that it might be coming soon. I mean, to our fans that are listening, it might be coming sooner than you think. And that would be a really cool project. It takes a lot of time, a lot of grit, grind, a lot of blood. Obviously, calling back to the motto, It would take a lot to do it. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of people would really appreciate it. A lot of people in the league would. That's the biggest thing I think you touched on, was how the biggest thing, like, you know, it's gonna be successful because the NBA believes in it. People that know basketball really well, know the business of basketball extremely well, and that obviously are following it and care a lot and are the ones investing money into it, believe in this thing. Mainstream media hasn't caught up to it yet because it's not as, you know, obviously the NBA is more established and the media goes for what's more established. But everyone that knows basketball, there was no one at Summer League that was like, yeah, the G League's overrated. Like, I never heard that. I don't think I will. You won't be hearing that from anyone that actually might, maybe, like, you know, some casual fans might be saying that, but there's no one that's in basketball, that works in basketball, that would ever even think about uttering that, because you'd just be incredibly wrong. And if you follow it enough, you realize that the G League's incredibly underrated, not overrated. And there's a lot to be done there.
Right. And you make a great point, man. If that's something that, like, working on a documentary of that nature would be huge for the people that don't know anything about it. There's so many fans. And like I said, it's only going to grow, right? And people love history, you know, the same way that there's NBA history buffs. Man, there's people out there that would be super interested to see, like, how this little league has really, like, kind of even transformed the NBA, right? Where, you know, last year, like, 43% of the players on opening day rosters had G League experience. I wouldn't be surprised if this year, 50% of the NBA opening day rosters have G League experience, you know? So this league is really transforming the NBA. It's rethinking the way we think of young prospects, right? Whereas before, like, hey, listen, these guys aren't playing at the NBA level. They're kind of rotting on these benches, right? And they're losing confidence. Well, let's send them to the G League. Let's see them average 20 points a game and get 35 minutes a game and build that confidence back up, show everyone that they can still play. And so, yeah, it's revolutionized the NBA over the past 20 years and is going to continue doing that. And as the league gets bigger, people are going to want to know about the history the same way you and I are really curious about the history, you know? That'd be a project that would be a hit. And before I forget, John, if that's a project that you want to pursue, one team that has to be on that documentary is the Reno Bighorns, right? Who are one of my favorite now defunct teams. I guess they're not technically defunct because they became the Stockton Kings eventually, you know what I'm saying? They were the Reno Bighorns, and then I guess that's still a carry on over the franchise. But back in 2011-12, the Reno Bighorns had what in my opinion is like the most stacked G League team of all time, right? And so it's unbelievable to look at some of these old rosters. And like I said, rosters that nobody really even knows about. And you look at this roster and it's like, oh my God, you know, on one team, right, is Danny Green, is Jeremy Lin, is Steve Novak, Bobby Simmons, who won most improved player in the NBA. And then you look down the list and it's like, oh, Mo Charlo, who was a G League All-Star. Andre Emmett, RIP, who was a G League All-Star. You have all these guys, Patrick Ewing Jr., who averaged like 15-7 that season. And then you keep going down the list. And like all the way at the bottom is Hassan Whiteside, who ends up, you know, probably being the best player out of all of them, except for like probably Danny Green. But that year, you know, he's a rookie. He's averaging 4 points and 3 rebounds. He's not even on the radar of probably some of these guys who were or on the verge of getting called up. And then you see this a team like this and you're like, oh my God, like this team could really, I mean, I'm not saying they could be a good NBA team, but you could make an argument that if you put this team in the NBA, they could win a few games, right? It's like some of these guys could do some damage. I know they were all super young and they had a lot of growing into their bodies, a lot of maturing to do. But if you look at those rosters, there's tons of them just like that, where you look at them, it's like, oh my God, like a team with, you know, even the Delaware 87ers, which is one of my favorite teams, or if not my favorite team, is like, you know, oh my God, they got like Christian Wood, you know, Sean Kilpatrick, they got, you know, Nate Robinson on the team, Baron Davis on the team, right? And then you have Russ Smith on the team dropping 65. They have Jordan McRae dropping 61, right? So you have all these teams you look back on and you look at these rosters, and it's like, oh my God, so much talent was on these one or two teams and nobody knew about it at the time, but these guys ended up all being really, really good players once they end up developing and then eventually coming into their own.
I love that idea of just all these guys, right? Like someone like Hassan Whiteside being so under the radar, and then right when his first few years in the league, right, explode. I mean, the day when he said, "I'm trying to get my 2K rating up," exploded, right? Having those like 10 block games, like ridiculous things like that.
Right.
For someone to start from the G League and have to really grind it out to get to that point is incredible. And like thinking about all the stories from the beginning is awesome. Like the Reno Bighorns. Are there any other teams maybe that you feel that way for? Like those maybe like right like that 2010 to 2015 range, or still the D League before we got to the current day G League, that really like that was like the first sign to everyone on the outside. Maybe like people. like a casual fan to say, oh, wow, let me actually, like, let me pay attention to this maybe. Like, actually something's going on then. There's actually guys from there getting called up and winning NBA championships or, you know, being part of contending teams. Like, what were some of those other teams or players that really stuck out before? Now, obviously, when the G League went, it's almost impossible. Like, you have a Bucks, you have a championship Bucks roster with, what is it? You got it right, actually. The NBA G League page, you got it wrong. How many was it with the Bucks?
Players, yeah, right. Roster. I think it was the NBA G League page said, like, they had 10 G League alum, but they really had 11. I forgot which. Oh, you know what? They forgot Dante DiVincenzo, who played a few games for the Herd. And so
gotcha.
I looked, I was like, 10. And I looked at the roster. I was like, no, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I was like, no, they got 11. So I didn't call it out or anything like that. But, you know, I did one up them on that one.
I love it because I remember I reposted what you had posted and I went with 10 because it's what the G League page went with. And I should have known to trust Jeffrey Key on that one because you actually DM me saying, John, trust me, it's actually 11, which is really, really funny.
Right.
In terms of what we were saying, though, thinking about the idea of like, okay, 11 guys on a championship roster having G League experience, like that's unheard of 5, 6 years ago. But even back then, right, there were still instances where stuff like that was happening and people were making noise. Like, who were some of those, whether it's players, whether it's teams? A few come to mind, like the Bakersfield Jam or Bakersfield Mafia that have come on. A lot of them have been members of the show.
Right.
But there's so many, there's teams in South Bay. There's so many instances, I feel like, where if you really paid attention, you really couldn't, you really had to take notice.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned the Bakersfield Jam. Like back in the day, they had Eric Bledsoe on a rehab assignment. They had Dennis Schroeder for a little while. They had TJ Warren. You know, everyone remembers bubble TJ Warren, right? But no one in their right mind would ever remember D-League TJ Warren, right? And then, you know, back in the day, Quincy Acey was another big name for the Bakersfield Jam. And another guy that no one really talks about is they had Ronaldo Major, who's actually the G-League's all-time leading scorer. That's the crazy part, too, about the history of the league is that a guy like Ronaldo Major, you know, no one even knows about him. And he's the all-time leading scorer, you know, the second most popular league in the United States right now, right? And so it's kind of crazy to see how like all these names, and to the casual fan, it's like Ronaldo Major, who's that? But, you know, he's a legend in the D League and from what he did, even though he only played in the NBA for a little bit amount of time. And then there was other teams like, you know, I mentioned before the Idaho Stampede. And to tell you the truth, around that time is when I didn't become fanatical cool then, but when Pierre Jackson was playing for the Idaho Stampede, I would watch him all the time. He was a rookie, averaging, you know, 29 and a half points a game, almost 30 points a game. And, you know, a guy being 5'10", getting 30 a game is just, I mean, he had the greenest light in the world. But him and D. Boston and, you know, Jarrell Bennehman, those guys on that one team were just so fun to watch. But there have been a ton of just guys in general came from the G League in those early D League days that we don't even know about. Like, right, the average fan wouldn't know that a guy like Matt Barnes came from the D-League, CJ Watson, even like, you know, Marcin Gortat played for Anaheim back in the day, and he's another D-League product too. You know, Amir Johnson, when he first got drafted, you know, he played, you know, 10 plus years in the NBA. When he first got drafted, he was a late second rounder. He played in the D-League as well as like a young 18-year-old, and he was getting 17 points a game. And it's like, wow, this guy's 18, 19 years old, getting 17 points and 8 rebounds against grown adults who are. The D-League is different, is weird because like all these guys are given 120% because all these guys want call-ups, you know? So when you're young like that and you're dominating against these guys that are really trying to put a hurting on a kid who got drafted, was a McDonald's All-American, that shows something, you know? And then so you have those guys. And then, you know, on top of that, you have like, you know, a Smush Parker who played for the G-League like kind of after his Laker days, but that was still like a kind of a big name. He was kind of one of those guys that played in the league and had experience and went to the D-League and dominated. And then there's other guys like Josh Howard, Jamal Tinsley, who's with those Pacers teams. There's so many I can just kind of name off of guys that had big impacts in the league. Antoine Walker as well had big impacts in the league, had D-League experience, whether it was before their primes or after their primes, and ended up, these early guys are the ones that really in their own way, like transform the league, you know? And then one thing that I've talked about recently on my page is like guys who weren't necessarily like that good in the D-League, but they were like groundbreaking and historic, and, you know, historic in their own right. Like another one is Sim Bular, who was the 7'5" Indian center. He ended up playing for the Reno Bighorns. He played for the Raptors 905. The first Indian player to play in the NBA. You know, his NBA stint was super short, but he spent 2 years in the G League, and he's a guy that really like helped transform the popularity of the league, like overseas. You know what I mean? And so yeah, there's all these stories and all these players that came from there that we don't really even know about. And it's crazy to look back and be like, oh my God, you know, this guy played in the D League, this guy played in the G League, you know, because otherwise we have no idea. And one more thing, John, that I've touched on also on my page is like how many either brothers or sons or cousins of former NBA stars have played in the G League too, right? And we're talking about currently, you know, David Stockton, son of John Stockton, Gary Payton II, son of Gary Payton, right? And then KJ Martin, son of Kenyon. And then we're talking about too, like, what's another good one? Oh, Cannon Cunningham, right? He's Cade Cunningham's brother, which is crazy in his own right, you know? Kavion Pippen, who's Scottie Pippen's nephew, played in the G League, right? And so you have all these guys who are related to stars. And it's crazy to see Kenyon Barry, son of Rick Barry, all these guys who are related to absolute superstars, and then their stories as well, because they're trying to achieve those same goals as their fathers or their uncles or whatever the case may be. So yeah, there's all this stuff that hasn't really been digged into yet that through two-way and through G League TV will kind of like gradually begin to unfold.
It's so exciting, and it really, I mean, and the one thing I want to tell everyone is I made Jeffrey show me his computer screen to know that he has no notes. This is all just from the top of his head. I want everyone to know listening to this,
right,
that this is all just like coming out. Like it's like the back of your hand right now. There's no notes. There's no preparation. I didn't tell you. I told you like, hey, Jeffrey, come on my show. We'll talk about the past of the G League. I gave you no questions. I gave you nothing. I was like, this is going to be a free flowing conversation. You're going to have a lot of fun. And this is all just like, you know this. So I'm actually, you brought up, and one thing I want to mention though, there's actually a really good, interesting documentary on the 7'5" Indian player, Simbular. Simbular.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very interesting documentary on Netflix about Simbular and his NBA journey, which I found fast. I watched it maybe like 2 weeks ago. I just got back from Vegas and it came up and I saw it. It was actually very interesting to see like his upbringing in India, being the tallest kid all the time and being like their shining hope in the league. So like someone like him, right? Adam Silver's in the documentary compared him to Yao Ming, like right in terms of having a similar impact, maybe not
right
to the extent of being right an all. You know, Yao Ming was an all-star every year he was in the league, stuff like that. Obviously, China has become a huge NBA market since then. India might get to that point. He might. We're talking about this now. In 10 years, we might look at him that same way. We don't know. Even though he only played in the G League, those were air quotes for those that can't see my fingers because of whether it's audio or because of my virtual background. But like they might say it's only the G League, but he might end up having a similar impact as someone as, you know, a Hall of Famer like Yao Ming because of his global impact. So that's interesting. But I loved when you mentioned Ronaldo Major and how he's the all-time leading scorer and no one knows who he is. And honestly, I don't know much about him. Can you please go into a little bit about, or were you about to say something? I'll cut this out.
Oh, I was about to say that actually Simbular played a little bit in the NBA.
Yeah.
So he played very briefly. He had a brief call up with the Sacramento Kings and got a bucket. And to tell you the truth, that bucket is the only thing that fans really needed to see in India, was that they wanted to see, you know, someone from their country, someone who represents them, get a bucket in the league. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Like it wasn't about like how long he played. And I think that everybody who saw him play in the G League, saw him play with the Reno Bighorns and the Raptors 9-5, we kind of knew that, you know, he wasn't going to stick around the league for a long time. You know what I mean? He wasn't a guy that was really going to, he wasn't going to be a 3 or 4 year player in the NBA. He was going to be like a 10-day contract type of guy, right? But just the significance of him having the opportunity to score a bucket in the league, it was all I think that country and his fans wanted.
Definitely, it's huge, right? The fact that he was able to do that and get that NBA call up and do those great things. You also mentioned something that I feel like we have to, if we're going to tell the history of the G League, we have to talk about their all-time leading scorer. So talking about the NBA without Kareem, like how could you do it? Right? Can you tell NBA history without Kareem? Right. It's kind of impossible. I personally don't know too much about Ronaldo Major. Can you tell our listeners maybe a little bit about him, maybe where he came from and what maybe happened with the prospect of him getting called up, maybe why it didn't happen? Like how did his whole career kind of play out?
Yeah, Ronaldo he's an interesting guy because it's kind of weird. He was more known as like a defensive stopper, right? So he was like one of these guys that year in and year out was one of the best defenders, best wing defenders in the G League. And he was like a scorer on the side. I keep saying G League, but it was really, you know, back in the day, the D League, right? And so he was the D League Defensive Player of the Year 1 year. He made D League all defense multiple years. But he was known as that. Like he was known as a stopper. But he played so many. And this is sometimes what you get is like you have guys who play so many years in the G League, right? D League, whatever. And they just rack up all these points. And he necessarily wasn't a great scorer. I think the most he averaged in a season was probably like 18 points a game. You know what I mean? But he could score. He could definitely score. But, you know, if you take 18 points, 15 points, you know, 13 points, and you multiply that over, you know, 10 seasons or so, it's like you're going to rack up a good amount of buckets, right? And so he ended up racking up over 5,000 career points. Is he all-time leading scorer? The thing is that he only had one small stint. Same with like Sim Bular. He only had one small stint in the NBA where he was called up 10-day contract with the Golden State Warriors. And he got, I think during that 10-day contract, he scored like 6 points or something like that. But it's really cool to see some of these stories because I've seen an interview with Ronaldo Major, and he was talking about his experience in the D-League and then his experience getting called up. And he was like, you know what? Same with Andre Ingram. They work all these years, you know, they're in the G League for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever the case may be. And all they do is they work for one moment, right? They work for one shining moment where they can call themselves an NBA player. And regardless of whether it lasts if it's in the blink of an eye or if it lasts, you know, a number of years, they tell themselves, I was an NBA player. And they can kind of like go to their deathbeds knowing that they accomplished their dream. And so it's kind of awesome to see like a guy like Ronaldo Major. And also, you know, the number two leading scorer is Vander Blue. And the number three, I believe, is Andre Ingram, right? So, you know, Andre is the same way. You know, he played 10 years, well, now 11 years in the G League. It was 10 years before he got called up, but 10 years in the G League for that one call up. And that's kind of what a lot of these guys just want, is that one chance to call themselves an NBA player.
I'm thankful you brought up the topic of Andre Ingram, because if we didn't, I think I'd be getting a very, very mean and very upset messages from Nick. I mean, all my guests from the South Bay Lakers, Nick Lagers, Brian Walsh, Ernest Scott. I'd be getting a lot of hate mail, being like, why? How could you not? Like, how could you tell the story of the G League without Andre Ingram? It's like talking about the NBA without LeBron or Jordan. Right. That's kind of right. Andre Ingram kind of has that kind of. I mean, everyone always talks so glowingly about his work ethic and his persistence with the league. If you follow the G League at all, you know the story of Andre Ingram already. But for all the listeners that don't, can you kind of recount that a little bit in terms of what really went down? Because I mean, I've asked a lot of, and that's kind of when I first started this, especially, Andre was like the one G League player I knew. So I would always mention it to my guests from the G League. Like I would ask, you know, people like Nick, like, oh, what was it like with Andre Ingram? But obviously like that, now I know way more players. And, you know, obviously that's almost a given. But for listeners that maybe don't know about Andre Ingram, his story is considered legendary and such an inspiration. Like, why is that?
Yeah, Andre's story is amazing. I mean, he played ball at American University. And then, so his first stint was with the Utah Flash. And he played like 4 years with the Utah Flash. And then he had a very brief stint overseas in Australia, in the Australian NBL. And I believe that after two games, he was asked out to, you know, he asked out of his contract and he went back and rejoined the G League, right? I mean, so he's a guy that over 10 years played in the G League, I read an article that said that he hadn't made over $29,000 in any year in the G League. So every year he was playing for contracts in the mid-20s, and it was for that one goal of being called up to the NBA. And now, granted, like, he's in a lot of ways the G League GOAT. Like, that 19-point game in his debut with the Lakers kind of, like, solidified it, right? But Andre was the same way as Ronaldo Major, where he was a really, really good player, but he was never considered a superstar. Right? It has more to do with the longevity than anything. You know, he's played 10 years, a decade in a league where most people after 2-3 years say, I'm giving up. I'm going overseas, right? I can't continue playing for this, you know, amount of money anymore. I have a family. He does have a family. And the awesome part about his story is that, you know, he never gave up on that NBA dream. And he said that he had a lot of pressures from people in his inner circle and from family being like, you know what, Andre, like, you're a talented basketball player. Go overseas, right? Even if it means being away from your family, or go take another job and maybe have a career shift, because you can't just continue doing this, right? For X amount of years just to chase this one dream. And then as he got older and older, you know, you would think that his chances of getting called up would decrease, right? But at the time, you know, Alex Caruso had an interview. He said, you know, GMs look for guys that can fill roles, and they're guys that are professional. Andre Ingram, throughout his whole career, whether it's with the Flash, whether it's with South Bay, was always a guy that could shoot, right? He's all-time leader in three-pointers made, and he has a career like 45% clip, which is amazing. He could always shoot, and he's always been super classy. He's the president of the G League Players Association right now. And so he was kind of like the perfect match. I don't actually know why he never got called up before, but when the Lakers did finally call him up, they said, you know, Andre, it makes for a great story. You're 32 years old, makes for a fantastic story, but we're calling you up because we actually need a shooter right now. We actually need the guy that can stay in the corner or stay on the wing and hit, you know, a bucket or two. Just everything after that, he had that one shining moment with a 19-point game, and the game after that, he kind of struggled. But everyone always remembers that 19 points. You know what I mean? Like, Chris Paul, after the game, talked about how amazing it was. And then he went on Inside the NBA, and he was like, yeah, you know, I only make X amount of money in the G League, but on the side, I tutor math. You know, I'm a math tutor. And people were like, and then Shaq and Kenny were like, what? You're a math tutor? He goes, yeah, you know, in order to make ends meet. And that was just like the icing on the cake. You know what I mean? He was a guy that was willing to do anything it took to achieve that one goal. And he ended up getting caught up that season. And then the next season, he got caught up towards the end of the year as well. And there were some rumors, like last year, he was a commentator in the bubble. And he had talked about, like, yeah, you know, I'm not going to play in the bubble this year, but I consider coming back. And I haven't heard anything about it since, but I would love for Andre to give it one more shot. He's 35. I'm sure he's still in great shape. I know that shot probably hasn't gone anywhere. I would love him to give it one more shot. You know what I mean? If the Lakers need, you know, a body towards the end of the year, they go on a finals run, right? And Andre's on that team. It would just be the perfect way to retire and sail into the sunset.
Definitely. I'm really hopeful that something that happens for him. Obviously, he's worked super hard for it, and looking forward to figuring that out. He's the one person, as I've gotten older, right, I've stopped fangirling maybe over players and asking for pictures. Like, where maybe I'll do it with people that I know, like former guests, but I haven't really done it with players that I don't know as much. When I went to my first ever G League game in January of 2020, it was a really ugly Lakers game, or South Bay Lakers game, where they only finished the game with four players. He actually hurt his shoulder in that game. You might remember that game.
I actually
spoken to some members on the staff. I remember I brought it up to, like, Ernest Scott on my show, and he's like, don't ask about that game, not that game. We finished with four players, don't bring that up. Obviously, just all in good fun. But after the game, I went up to him and I asked him for a picture, and he was happy to oblige. You know, even though he had the sling on his arm and everything, we took the picture together, just class personified, and just obviously someone that I will always support no matter what. Being, you know, that experience is one, you know, my personal one with him, but knowing that he's done that for dozens, you know, so many other people, countless other people. So that's awesome. You're wearing a jersey right now for a certain player that's, you know, been kind of in and out of the G League. Now he's playing overseas. Like, tell us a little bit about Rafael, because he loved our last video together. He commented on it and everything. What's his story? Because he's the all-time block leader. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, I'll show you guys right here. So this is a one-of-one game-worn and signed on the back Rafael Putney jersey. And so Putney, he and I got to know each other over the last few years through G League TV and then also through TBT. And this past year, he was in TBT, led his team to the championship game. But he and I talk a ton, and he was like, I know you how much you love the G League. Like, I have these jerseys sitting around. And he goes, you can have one if you want. And he took a picture, and it was this one. It was his Spurs Summer League jersey, and it was his All-Star Game jersey from 2016. And I was like, oh my God, you'd give me your All-Star Game jersey? He was like, yeah, you know, I'd be honored if you have it. And so I was like, yeah, I don't want to take that from you. I was like, but, you know, the Bayhawk jersey's dope. And so he sent me this, and this has kind of been, like, you know, my all-time favorite piece. But, you know, Putney is another guy, the same way we talk about Ronaldo Major, the same way we talk about Andre Ingram, where, you know, he's a guy that played in the G League for like 5-6 years, did some fantastic things, was an all-star. He was like the KD of the G League. He was shooting 30-foot bombs. He's 6'10", super wiry, unbelievably athletic. Unfortunately, he never got a call up to the NBA. You know, there's tons of guys who play year in and year out in the G League for that one shot in the NBA. And unfortunately, he never got the call up. But he is, will always go down in history. He's the G League's all-time leader in blocks. You know, no one has blocked as many shots as he did. In the G League, there was, during his era, especially during his prime, there was nobody who was skying for blocks the way that he was. You know what I mean? Just like flying out of nowhere. The same way we think of, like, maybe, I guess the KD, yeah, the KD could be example, but more like defensively. Who's a really, like, maybe like a,
I mean, this whole finals, we were watching Giannis do it, so.
Yeah, Giannis, right. Another Giannis, like, you know, skinny, super long, and just flying out of nowhere and just blocking shots into the fourth or fifth row, you know? The same way we looked at, like, Kenny Wooten back a couple years ago when he was playing for the Westchester Knicks. Same thing, you know, and his highlights are just amazing. But, you know, he's made a great career for himself. He never got that call up in the NBA, unfortunately, but he had some summer league stints. He was an all-star, like I said. He has had a great amount of success overseas. I think he just finished in Puerto Rico, averaging like 20-10. And I think he led the league in blocks as well. So he's made a great career out of himself. He's only 31. And listen, teams, like, hey, listen, 31, we saw Andre Ingram get called up at 32. Like, it's never too late to give someone their first call, you know? And I think that there could be a chance that we could see him in the G League again this year. Maybe not to start the year, but, you know, as the players get called up, or, you know, players get cut and stuff like that, we could see him maybe enter the league like midseason or so.
That'd be incredible. I hope that happens. We actually DM'd him after our last episode, and we've been trying to schedule one around his return from Puerto Rico. So once he gets back, we'll have that episode for everyone, which will be fine. I know you'll be tuning into that one. But I'm curious about him, like, playing overseas. I'll obviously ask him that too. But I'm curious about your perspective, seeing so many of the guys take that road, right? I would imagine a lot of these G League players, when they're not in the G League to help make some money, they're playing in these outside leagues. They're spending their right. summers overseas because the G League season runs concurrent with the NBA season. The WNBA players do it a lot too. Like, we kind of see that trend a lot. I mean, tell us a little bit about, I mean, do all G League guys do that? Do only some of them do that? Like, Andre Ingram was a math tutor. Like, did he do it? Like, how does that all, what's the process like from all these guys in making that decision for themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, most of these guys end up playing summer league somehow, right? Whether they're playing summer league, so most of them won't go overseas after the G League season ends, with the hope that, or if they do, they do for a very brief amount of time, because they're hoping that they get a summer league deal, which could then turn into a training camp deal, which could then lead to like a two-way, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So a lot of the players that do go overseas for an extended period of time are the ones who have done 3, 4, 5 years in the G League, and they're like, you know what, I've played summer league before, it didn't work out, and they're maybe not necessarily giving up on the NBA dream, but they're like, I'm in the prime of my career, I need to go make money. Right. And so they're not waiting on a summer league. They're not waiting on a summer league gig or anything like that. They're just like, you know what? A team in, whether it's Putney and Puerto Rico or some other players, they just might be like, listen, this team offered me $50,000 to play for them for the summer. I'm going to go take that guaranteed $50,000 instead of taking, you know, kind of measly dollars to play for the summer league team. And then for most of these guys that play summer league, that's it. You know, nothing happens after that. It's summer league. And then they realize they're not going to make it. Then they're back in the G League again. And then, you know, maybe they cost themselves $50,000 that they could have made guaranteed if they had played overseas. So I think it just depends on the actual situation, you know, how deep these guys are in the league. I don't like, tell you the truth, seeing these guys that are like 1 year in, they say, oh, you know, I gave the G League a shot, didn't work out, I'm gonna go play overseas. I would like to see more players, and a lot do, but there's a good amount that also just play 1 year and then they go overseas and they kind of fade into obscurity. You know what I mean? When you're playing overseas in Poland, or, you know, you're playing overseas in like Russia, it's like, yeah, there's a good amount of people that do follow these overseas teams, and especially the stars that are performing well. But, you know, to the average like American fan, and then also to a lot of times to these NBA teams, they kind of just like, you know, disappear. And then it's like you see them 3 years later, and it's like, oh yeah, I forgot about that guy. Why did he leave so early? Like, why didn't he give the G League another shot? You know, one of my favorites, just you know, that falls in that category is Merrill Shayok. You know, Merrill was a guy that averaged like 23 points per game for the Bluecoats in 2019-20. Was just like, he was known as like baby KD among Sixers fans, and he got a call up to the league. And I don't know how much money he was offered overseas. I'm sure it was a good amount, but he took the overseas deal. You know, I haven't heard of him, you know, a year and a half or so, and it's like, oh, I wish I could still see him play. I wish that he was still like on the cusp of maybe getting a call-up, which I think he would if he was still in the G League. But yeah, you know, some players take that route. It just depends on the situation.
Definitely. I think about those, like the years people might spend in the G League and the longevity and how that impacts a lot of, you know, the decisions they make because of it is awesome. We've mentioned a lot of these like great all-time G League players have stayed in the league for 8 to 10 years, let's say, and have built a reputation for themselves in the G League. But who are some of those guys that maybe were, what if it's one-hit wonders, who had like magical seasons in the G League, who score, you know, were torching the Nets from three, like had put up these video game numbers to where either it ended up in a call-up, or maybe they took the talents overseas because they didn't get the call-up. Like, who are some of those guys that maybe weren't in there for 8 to 10 years and are on the all-time cumulative charts, all-time total charts, but they're in those like single season, oh my God, did Wilt Chamberlain join the G League? Like, who are those guys?
Well, the one that sticks out the most is like Antonio Blakeney, right? And Antonio was a good player. He played with Ben Simmons at LSU. And, you know, he was like known as a good scorer. I think, you know, as a sophomore, he put up like 15 a game, which is respectable. You know, of course, Ben was the primary ball handler. But then he goes to the G League, and then he puts up his rookie year 32 points a game, you know, which is the all-time highest mark ever. You know, a guy that's like, you're like, oh my God, this guy's a rookie, you know, and he did get called up to the Bulls. He played those 2 years in Chicago. And then it's kind of weird. Like, he went to China and was putting up video game numbers in China, right? And you're like, oh, he's on the cusp of a call-up. And then he goes back to the G League again. And he plays, unfortunately, for a team that didn't do very well last year, the Canton Charge. And kind of just, like, didn't get into a very good groove. They were very guard-heavy last year in Canton. And so he's the guy that's, like, at one point in time was putting up video game numbers. I'm sure if you look at his, like, G League career numbers, still like 27 points per game just because of how high that first season was. And then you have another guy like Jordan McRae, right? Who Jordan McRae, he back in, you know, he has that 61 point game back when he was with the Delaware 87ers. In the 2018-19 season, he averaged 30 plus, led the league in scoring. He had a streak of like 13 straight games of 30 points, you know, which is absolutely ridiculous. And he's a guy right now, it's like he's playing in China. His numbers are just okay. You know what I mean? And it's kind of weird to see these guys where they're just, you know, that they're so good. You know that they're supposed to be in the league. And for whatever reason, the case may be, it doesn't really pan out. You know, Russ Smith's another one, 65 point game, averaged, you know, 20 plus his entire career, played most of his career overseas because his time in the NBA with the Grizzlies was very short. But, you know, you look at these guys and they're just so talented. You look at the numbers, like, how are these guys not more successful in the NBA? But it goes back to the point where I previously said where, you know, a lot of these teams are just looking for guys that can fill in roles. You know, they might not be looking for the guy to get 30 or to get 32 like Blakeney got. They're looking for the guy to get eight points in 15 minutes, right? And so a lot of times it's these big name scorers that don't eventually pan out in the league, which is hard to believe. But, you know, Kevin Porter is like an exception, you know what I mean? And a few other guys are like the exceptions. But for the most part, you'll be surprised to see how many guys in the league year in and year out average 25 plus and are back in the G League somehow or some way, right? The guys that maybe get like 15, 5-5, how those are the guys that stick in the league. You know, it's really interesting to see.
An interesting example of that, and you mentioned him before, and I actually didn't know about his G League time, was Marcin Gortat. He's one of those guys, right? There's all the little things. He's not going to give you 30, I don't think, ever, like whether it's in the G League or it's in the NBA. He's not one of those guys, but he'll do all the little things. And that's, I mean, whether it's all the coaches that come on the show have said, we look for guys that can, I mean, well, when it's the NBA, in terms of getting called up, it's guys that can play one role at an NBA level. It's not about scoring, because the only people that can score at an NBA level are James Harden and people like that that could score a lot of points at an NBA level. We're looking for guys that could set screens at an NBA level, that can, you know, that can do skills like that at an NBA level. So that's obviously super interesting, thinking about, you know, the guys that have, you know, been able to prove that in the G League and the guys that maybe couldn't, but they still put up some really cool numbers, and you know, obviously they'll be forever entrenched in history for that reason, which is really, really cool. Moving over, so like obviously a lot of the things we've spoken about have been things from, you know, more than 5 years ago. The reason why a lot's changed in the league and it's kind of happened like that is because of the Gatorade and how Gatorade kind of took over and changed everything. So right. A lot of things are different, whether it's everything's different right now with the G League now, right? I mean, we'd be hard pressed to find something that stayed the same since the Gatorade merger. Can you just, for our listeners that maybe weren't around in 2016 when Gatorade took over, how did that go down and what were the ramifications of it?
Yeah, Gatorade bought them out. And to tell you the truth, when Gatorade first bought them out, and they, you know, it's officially like, It switched from the D League to the G League, right? I just wasn't a fan. But to tell you the truth, the D and having it developmental, right? The developmental league, it makes it feel like it's like a minor league. And when you think of like, oh, when it was the NBDL and it's the D League, it's like, oh, it's the minor league. It's like the semi-pro system of the NBA. But that's not true. It's like, I think adding the G in a really weird way has added more legitimacy. It's like, oh, it's sponsored by Gatorade. Well, Gatorade is a multi-billion-dollar corporation. They wouldn't put their name behind something that they know won't work, you know? But to tell you the truth, I don't really know too much of like the deal that went down. All I just remember was like when that deal went down and it switched to the G League, like all of a sudden on benches, like all the marketing that goes in, like the Gatorade logo is everywhere on the court, right? It's like in the stands, it's on the seats, right? So the Gatorade plasters their logo pretty much everywhere. But yeah, it's been kind of, and I think that the funding from the Gatorade as well has helped the G League too. I'm not sure exactly how much money they get from it, but there is like a definitely a financial incentive for them to switch over to Gatorade. And so I think that was like the biggest thing, is I wonder like how much money was actually involved. Those numbers weren't made public, so I wasn't too sure about that, but I'm sure that there was definitely a financial incentive for them to do it, which is the reason why they really made the move.
Definitely. I'm thankful they did that, because if this G looks really, really cool, but not just that, would it be like drive, determination, and NBA D League? Like that just doesn't flow, right?
That's, yeah,
like,
right. It doesn't.
The G kind of fits with like Gen Z. Like there's so many reasons why I'm thankful exactly for that marketing ploy. But also I think it's really cool thinking about just like, I mean, like you said, it just added legitimacy to it. Obviously like being with the company instead of like, you know, the word developmental or D, or kind of like the idea of lesser than. You've never gotten a G, you might've gotten a D on a test, but you've never gotten a G on a test, right? Like
right.
D,
exactly.
a D, a D's kind of has a negative connotation in that aspect, whereas G, right, is a little bit like, this logo is just awesome. That's why I have it, you know, one, two, three, you know, all these many times in my screen because of how cool the G League is. But then, right, that's the interesting thing about, you know, that change and how that, right, and that supercharged everything. A lot of the coaches that I've spoken to, a lot of them have been in the G League since its inception. So they're maybe a little bit newer, younger coaches that have only known it as the G League. But those that have been there for longer kind of tell me like, yeah, man, like I wasn't really sure. And then like when it came, like then it was a no brainer for me to stay in the G League, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that kind of like that change from D League to G League made it permanent. And I mean, it also signals to everybody like this thing's going to, I mean, if you think it's big now, just wait until, you know, we really get cooking, which I think is happening in the coming years, which is fun. So that's obviously really cool thinking about that transition. And that's kind of when you started. Why? I mean, so tell us a little bit. I mean, that might be a little helpful. What was the state of the G League when you started watching, and like what drew you to it so much? And like, you know, right, you know, when you started making G League TV and covering it, like what was it about it that really drew you to it? And what did the league look like? Who was really dominant? Like who was getting called up at that time you really started paying attention? Like what really, you know, allowed you to become a fanatic?
Yeah. So I started following it like 2015, and I followed it before. But not as like a fanatic. And around like 2015, 16 seasons when I started going to games, I started like, even when I wasn't at the game, just like tuning in. They used to show their games on like Facebook Live. And then before that, it was on YouTube, right? So just even if I wasn't able to go to a game, I was like, okay, it's on at this period of time. I'll be tuning in, right? And so when I first started following it, to tell you the truth, like what really drew me to it was the fact that nobody else was really into it. And John, you're kind of the same way. Like I kind of like doing things that not for the sake of being different, but I like things that necessarily like stand out, right? So everybody who's a basketball fan, to me, like if you say you're a basketball fan and then you say your favorite player is LeBron, it's like, yeah, you're a basketball fan, but only to like a certain extent, right? But if you say you follow the D League, then it's like, oh, you know, you really have to be a basketball fan to follow that. Like, or if you follow like D2 basketball or overseas basketball, right? It's those type of fans are like the most like fanatical. And so the fact that nobody was following the D League and seeing how like talented these guys were, and it helped also that at the time like Emeka Okafor was playing in the D League and Baron Davis gave it a little run too, that I was like, man, these guys can really play. And then saw left and right these players getting called up, and it's like, okay, they're not just D League players, they're actually NBA players. And once they get to the league, what gives the league legitimacy is how well they play once they get to the NBA. And a lot of these guys are playing really well. And so I really just kind of fell in love with like the small brand of basketball that no one else was really following. And then also, you know, you'll see it this year, John, when you go to the Long Island Nets games, how family friendly the games are. You know, I can't stress enough, like if you have a little kid, or even if you're just a basketball fan yourself, you have access to players, you have access to coaches, you have access to people on staff that you can network with and stuff like that, people that want to get into basketball. And it's such an opportunity that you will not get at the NBA. When you're going to the NBA game, first off, to even sit down there, you're going to, at the lower levels, you're going to have to shell over hundreds of dollars. And it's just not money that I have to give out. And I'm sure it's not money that a lot of people have to give out. So the chance of meeting players, meeting coaches, meeting executives is super low, unless you want to pay a, you know, hefty price. The G League is different. Like you can buy a $10 ticket and move all the way down and they're not going to stop you. You know what I mean? Because typically like the Blue Coats Arena only sits 2,500. Most games, like, hey, you know, you might get 500 people there. You can kind of just pick your seat. You know, like, so I'll buy the cheapest ticket and I'll just sit wherever. No one ever asked me for my ticket. After the game, you know, the players are just kind of just like lingering around the arena. Yeah, you can just stay and just talk to them and kind of make connections that way. And so that is what kind of drew me to the G League, was what was like the access that you wouldn't get in an NBA game. And then also the fact that no one was really following at the time.
So I definitely want to, yeah, this is awesome. And one, like, there's so much to unpack here in terms of like what made you come into it. And obviously the G League as it is today, which of course we'll get into maybe a little bit more in the next episode. But I mean, definitely this whole idea of the past is awesome. This episode's cool. I mean, I could talk to you about like, oh my God, we could just keep on going deeper into every single season. I know you'll come up with something to talk about to make that part of the season interesting. But what's some advice you'd give to someone to get started in the G League? For me, for example, when I wanted to get into the NBA, when I was 12, 13, I'd never played basketball before. before. I didn't know anything about basketball. I didn't know what Jordan's number was, and like I made fun of. Like I didn't know anything. And then I just started playing NBA 2K, and I went on Wikipedia, and I would okay, this team won the championship this year. Okay, well, okay, let's who did they have? Who were their best players? Okay, oh, this is a highlight film of this guy. Wow, he's really good. Like now I'm checking out some other stuff. Okay, let me watch a full game from whatever year. Oh wow, like you know the announcer said this. Let me check out this, and it just kind of kept on building. So now I'm making content, and now it's where I'm following it so much. Like, what would be some advice for you to someone maybe like me who it's their first year really watching the G League and they really want to learn? I mean, this episode's a good start, but how could they go even further to really learn more?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the biggest thing is like, it's going to take an adjustment period, you know, because a lot of these guys, a lot of times you'll watch a G League game if you're, a new fan and you might not know anybody on either team. You know what I mean? Like you might go to a game and be like, okay, I remember him because he was a star in college, right? If you go to a College Park game, right? Sharif Cooper is one of the two-way players, you know? So it's like most fans would be like, oh, I remember Sharif because he killed in summer league and he was a beast in high school and stuff like that. But who are these other 14 guys? I would say that with the G League, there's like a learning period where you have to like actually like it probably take a few weeks to remember some of these names. A lot of these names, like I said, are not, you wouldn't be familiar with as like a normal NBA fan or a normal basketball fan. You know, a lot of these guys are coming from even like the D2 level, right? Some of them come from D2 level. Some have played 5 years overseas and they're getting their first shot in the G League. Some are coming from low major D1 schools. So these are guys that we don't really like pay attention to during the year. But the biggest thing is just like watching as many games you can. If you go to games, and trust me, if you go to games and every Saturday, I don't know if it's like this for the teams now, you know, with the COVID protocols and stuff like that, but they used to have this thing where like every Saturday the teams would, after their games, they would have autograph signings for all the fans, right? And so the Delaware 87ers did this all the time, and I used to go to all the Saturday games and the fans would line up, and if you get to meet the players, you'll definitely remember their name, right? So it's like, you know, going to games, getting that experience of, you know, meeting these guys and seeing them up close, of course watching the games, and then also just like making sure you follow the guys are getting called up and in, you know, week in and week out, right? I think that's the most important thing is like yeah, there's a ton of guys in the G League that probably won't make any headlines, you know. The biggest way is like, if you follow, what is it? Like there's another page called, what's it called? I'm drawing blanks on it, but there's another page on Instagram where they focus on like the call-ups and stuff like that. And so, you know, if you follow that page and then, you know, you follow my page too, you'll see like all the transactions that happen, you know, week in and week out. I think those are the biggest things, that like you just have to take the time to really watch the games and like study the players. And, you know, like I said, it's an adjustment period, but your knowledge of basketball will be as elite as anybody else's if you follow the G League and you know like these 13th and 14th guys on NBA rosters who came from the G League. You'll be as knowledgeable as anybody. And I'm sure that would work out really well if you wanted to work in the G League too, is having this type of expertise. And so yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is just like taking the time to watch the games.
Love that. And I definitely did a good job of that last year. Could have maybe done a little bit better with the show maybe starting up. I'm watching the bubble. This year I'll be physically there for 24 of them. No matter what, I'll be at those games and taking that all in. So I just really can't wait for all of it. And the excitement, like the way you're describing the arena. Like I was there for a game, like I said, with four guys on the court. And it was still awesome. Like I still loved it. Everyone was still, like I said, lingering around. It was still, and that was my first time doing it. And the last time, unfortunately, because of COVID. Summer League, same thing. Like that whole environment was there.
Right.
In terms of knowing these guys, like this is at summer league, you know, maybe last year when I first started the show, I'd talk to G League coaches. I really wouldn't know a lot of these guys or the players they had or the history of their team. I'm still not at the Jeffrey Key level. I'm not a god yet. I'm not a G League god, but I'm trying to get there. And I realized this summer as I was talking to people, and I knew, and they would be like, wow, like you know this stuff. Like, because when you're there, you obviously know, but I'm not there. I'm not like, you know, in working for the G League or in a role like that yet. So a lot of these coaches would find out that I knew this stuff or that I knew all the team, you know, even some simple as that, I'd know the team names. You know, people I met at Summer League that didn't know like all the G League team names.
Right.
It's crazy. You know,
it's crazy. It's crazy. John, I'm glad you mentioned that, because being in basketball, like you and I have very similar goals. You know, our goal is to like work in basketball for the rest of our lives and stuff like that. You know, I'm shocked as to how many people that I know, and probably that you would know too, are these like basketball, or consider themselves like basketball savants. You know what I mean?
That want to be GMs. Let's say they want to be GMs.
They want to be GMs that claim to be experts, right? And they couldn't name more than 10 players in the G League. Like, it kind of baffles me. I'm like, wow, you know, we all want to work in the NBA. That's everybody's dream, that wants to work in basketball, is they want to work in the NBA. And you would think that you would just take the time to know people's names outside of the headliners in the NBA, you know? Like I said, I'm not concerned with what LeBron is doing. I'm not concerned with, like, what Steph is doing. I mean, yeah, it's cool and stuff like that, but show me, like, I'm more concerned with, like, what Jordan Poole's doing or what Juan Toscano-Anderson is doing. You know what I mean? Like, guys that are in the G League, those two guys will never play in the G League again, but there's tons of guys who are in the league now that will eventually make their way back down to the G League. And so paying attention to these guys and having that knowledge, if you go to interview to a GM or whoever the case may be, and you know that little thing, all you got to do is hit them with like one or two cool facts, and they're like, whoa, I can't believe you followed this, you know? Especially the people that work in the G League. You'll be shocked. John, I know you have the same situations where like you meet people who are coaches in the G League, executives in the G League, and they're just so used to basketball fans not knowing anything about them, right? Not knowing anything about their journeys, not knowing anything about the players that they coach, whatever the case may be, their teams. They don't even know their team names. And then, so if you just hit them with like basic knowledge, trust me, you'll make an impression that will last so much longer than it would be if you just followed the main stars in the NBA.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, to be honest with you, that was me about a year or two ago. I actually had downloaded the map of the G League with all the team names. This must have been 2 years ago when at that point, I'd never seen a G League game in person. I was getting ready to, you know, really jump into this whole basketball world. I started coaching. I'd done all this stuff. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I sat there trying to memorize the map. And that's not the best way to like doing like stuff like that. It's not a high school, you know, Spanish quiz or something like that. It's much more than that. The reason why I know all this history about them now is because I'm actually interacting with people that do it. I'm not just doing it to like pass time on the train to like, this is seriously what I did. I was like, you know what? I got to get into this G League if I want to impress people. And like this 3 years ago was even, you know, less cool than it, you know, it was even less, you know, looked at it even, you know, less than it might be now, or less people knew about it even then. So I thought I was really getting a step ahead of the game when I did this on the train, trying to figure out all these names. And that wasn't a good way to do it. Because we're maybe talking about how our listeners can learn more about the G League. The best way to do it is to actually, you know, meet these coaches, right? Put yourself out, meet these coaches, watch these games. And like nice games, look, hopefully I get to bring a cute date with me every once in a while. But for the most part, I'll be going by myself for a lot of these games. Nemo will be joining me for sure. And if you're ever if you're ever in New York, you better be coming to a Long Island Nets game with me.
Yeah, no doubt.
The seat next to me is open. So, but that might not happen every night. On a Tuesday night, I might have to go solo. And I'm okay with that. I'm fine with sitting there, and then people might be like, oh, wow, you're a loner. No, I'm fine with sitting in that seat, having, you know, some popcorn. I'm not a big popcorn guy, but the proverbial popcorn. For me, it's more of like a protein bar or something like that, but kicking back, relaxing, and watching a basketball game. I'd actually much rather do that. Watch 40 minutes of good basketball,
right?
Talk to some of the coaches afterwards, that, you know, some of them that I know, like Jimmy Oakman on the Long Island Nets staff, and actually take it in, look at the other team. You know, a lot of these, the cool thing about this season, at first I was a little annoyed that I wouldn't get to see all the teams. I wanted to see the South Bay Lakers. I wanted to see Nick in Mexico City. I wanted to see the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, the Iowa Wolves. I wanted to see these teams. Birmingham Squadron, so many good guests from there. Unfortunately, I won't get to do that, but the cool thing is I'm seeing the same teams multiple times in a row, right? So I'm really gonna get to learn some of these teams. I get to see them one night, catch them.
Absolutely.
There. Like, that's actually what I'm really excited for. And the other games, I guess I have to set up to watch those on TV. I guess I'm going to set it up to where I never watch an East Coast game on TV, because I'm watching all the teams I can't see when they're playing the Long Island Nets, when they're not playing the Long Island Nets. So that's going to be have to do with this year. I hope a lot of other people listen to this episode. If one person sends me a text, and I normally get a few after these episodes. If I get like one app text that says, hey, like, thanks to you and Jeffrey doing this episode, like, you know, second episode of Two Way, I got tickets for my local team. Or, you know what, like, I invested in and it was a G League, like, league pass kind of a thing, or like you can watch it, you know, the way you stream it. I think I did it for the WNBA last year. I think I did it for the bubble. It was also like there was some streams available too. We can maybe get it for free. But something like that, right? If I start getting those texts, I'll be a very, very happy man. I mean, I'm expecting a few of them. So I'm happy we got to do this and tell this story about the past of the G League. It was fun. I know we could definitely, like, if we really just like got really, if we pulled out, I mean, this is off the dome. If we actually had like sheets in front of us, we could probably keep talking about this for hours on end. But this is all just straight from the brain, from the heart, like straight knowledge, and obviously what you're super passionate about. I really enjoy doing it. Thank you for being the first episode, the first interview episode of Two Way.
I appreciate it, John. And I thank you so much for having me on, dude. I'll say this. I know I'm going to get off this call and then be mad at myself because I forgot something. I forgot to bring up something from the past, right? And I was like, oh, this would have been a great story to talk about on the podcast. But, you know, I think, you know, the G League, the growth of the G League in the next few years is going to be huge. Like I said, 50% of the league by next season is going to have G League experience. As the league grows, you know, Two-Way will grow. G League TV will grow. So, like, you know, the expansion of the league, and as it continues to get bigger and better, is like good for all of us. But yeah, I'm going to see you at games this year, John. It's going to be fun.
Thanks for listening to Gen Z Hoops. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all major social media platforms at Gen Z Hoops. You can tune in and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and every other podcast platform on the planet. Get ready for the next episode.